welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about politics and comics. Not only the politics behind comics, but the politics that drive certain comic storylines. You, of course, know my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Oh, I don't know if I'm a red state or a blue state on this one.
Also with us is a red ink.
Cyclops is right.
Also with us, once again, Aiden Paladin.
I'm Aiden Paladin, Altana Bolt.
All right. So,
and let's... before we get going, Ben, I have to say one thing to Red. You shut your whore mouth. Scott Summers is a dick.
Scott Summers is a dick. And he, I don't think he was right in terms of AVX. I don't think anyone was right there.
He was dead the whole time, so he didn't have anything to be right or wrong about. He was dead the whole time.
And don't get me wrong. Old Scott Summers is a dick. Young Scott Summers still has a chance. He could not turn out that way.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, people are blaming Scott Summers for something he didn't do. He was dead. He was dead on page two.
He didn't do nothing.
Well, that was Death of X. It was... Anything after Death of X, you can't blame Scott for anything.
Mm. Yeah, it was all Emma.
Yeah, oh, that's true. Yeah.
And Red will talk about later about why that doesn't make any goddamn sense, but first we'll talk about, you know, comics as an industry has always been, at least at the beginning, you know, even in the beginning, slightly left-leaning. I mean, if you look at most of the writers and authors, most of them were registered Democrats. I mean, Jack Kirby, nice, great guy. Honestly, I think he'd be very conservative today, but back then he was very liberal.
Stuff has changed. Stuff has changed. I'm not saying I don't agree with the idea of the big switch, and I'm not going to support Dinesh D'Souza in any way. But I don't really agree with the concept of the big switch. But the thing is that what was left in 1950 and what was left in 2005 is not what's left today.
Yeah,
like that stuff has gone way, way far left. So yeah, I'm sure Jack Kirby would be a horrible conservative white male today, but
well, you don't hear that spinning noise. That's him turning over in his grave.
Right. Poor Jack.
Could create a perpetual source of energy with that.
From Jack Kirby's spinning grave. Oh, I'm sure you could.
Yeah, I think that that we reached like that grave spinning has reached light speed when Secret Empire started being published.
I have a long rant that I'm going to actually create a video about.
Yes, you will. But again, it's like I said, it's just back to the industry was it always was left leaning. I mean, one could argue that the concept of being a vigilante, a superhero, is a much more conservative ideology. You know, I'm not sure how far we want to go into the actual ideology of being a vigilante, if it is more conservative or more liberal to talk about the internal ethics of vigilantism and how it identifies on the political spectrum. I mean, do you guys want to at least make an attempt for like a couple of minutes of discussing that?
Well, that would be, I would say, the idea of vigilantism can both be a left-leaning ideology and a right-leaning ideology, because I could see it as a very libertarian idea. I don't know, though, at the same time, because the primary thing about libertarianism is to never violate the non-aggression principle. So, but if you violate it, if you have violated the NAP as a criminal, then I could see that as being a libertarian, like a libertarian hero would be someone who would want to bestow justice upon those who have violated the NAP. That's sort of Steve Ditko's perspective. Yeah, the question and Mr. A. Yeah, that would be Ditko's outlook, I think. Libertarian. Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Randian perspective.
That stuff is stronger than the strongest sleep aid ever. When I was in high school, there was a scholarship, like it was worth $3,000 for writing an essay on Ayn Rand. And I was like,
I did that too.
I tried it, My dad had a copy of Atlas Shrugged. I opened up. Okay, this is easy. I love reading books. I read books all through my childhood. Page three.
Oh, but see, I loved Atlas Shrugged, and I was always a Rand fan. But I've been a libertarian my whole life, so.
Well, did you hear about the new Ayn Rand biography flick they're going to make?
No, I'm sure they're going to butcher it, though.
Yeah, it's starring with Steve Buscemi.
Oh, okay, that's nice.
That was a joke.
Oh.
Because Steve Buscemi looks just like Ayn Rand.
Oh my God. Okay, I didn't even get this fucking joke. Fuck me.
I'm sorry.
Holy shit. No, what a terrible... No, that was good, though. I was just like, I wouldn't put anything past Hollywood at any point.
It's scary how much they look alike, though. I'm serious. I mean,
I don't think I've ever actually looked at them side by side. Steve Buscemi and Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, wow. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, geez. Yeah, I didn't realize that. That's unfortunate.
For who?
I think for her. But... for her, that's pretty unfortunate.
But, back, like I said, it's just a fact of the industry. I mean, I can only count three, maybe four creators that were not, like, liberal in the classic term or even in the new term. I mean,
It makes sense, though. We should explain, I think, beyond just talking about vigilantism, about why that would make sense about comics. Because the comics were so much about, particularly, following the CCA,
yeah.
As to why it would be that there would be so many people who were involved in this that were, and before the CCA as well, who were involved in this art form that was a new art form. Of course they're going to be liberal. Of course they're going to be left-leaning. They're artists.
And another thing, if you look at it, is like if the early issues of Superman, you have Superman handling social issues. Like,
yes.
If a man's beating his wife down the hallway, Superman will break down the door and beat the wife beater.
Right. Well, and all of them were like that. And I mean, it made sense at the time. These were positive social values. It's just it is that liberalism and leftism have changed, but it would make sense from a historical perspective as to why people who were involved in the creation of sequential artistry would be left-leaning.
Yes, absolutely, I agree. And again, like I said, if we look at creators that were more on the right, there's like three, maybe four I can think of off the top of my head. Those are Chuck Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Miller.
Yep. Well, Miller had like a crazy thing though.
Yeah. Steve Ditko, who is much more centralist than most people. You know, most people, like if you talk to people,
he's a libertarian.
Yeah, people would think he's like totally off the reservation as much as Miller is, but he's much more centralist than people that would give him. He's also very private. I mean.
Yes, he's one of the most private people in comics, astoundingly. It's like, that's why when I tell people, like, did you know that Ditko's still alive? It's like, what? Because he doesn't make it obvious he's still alive. Dixon would be the other one that I would say is pretty obviously. It is clear that he has a more conservative political bent. Yeah.
Yeah. And, again, you know, it's like when you look at all these creators and... And again, it's like, I think that it's a very interesting way to like dissect, you know, the times, seeing how things just, you know, change in the ebb and flow of not only the social perspective, but also, you know, the perspective of our creators. I mean, our media creators. I mean, like I said, even if, you know, the majority of the creators were left, they didn't take for account that like creators like Claremont, who was pretty left-leaning back in the day, still wrote stories that were morally ambiguous to the point where anyone left or right could claim these ideals and these values, saying, hey, yeah, sure. this jives with me. And that was one of Claremont's strengths back in the day, was he could tell stories like that without...
Yeah, but Claremont had a definite, I mean, Days of Future Past, such a... clear political bent, and a lot of the stories that he told involving characters like Kitty were, yeah, clear political bent there. Clear messages about racism, clear messages about anti-Semitism.
Right.
And the X-Men, and that is why, like, you know, it's interesting when you talk to people who don't know much about comics, and, like, they know that the X-Men are old as shit, but they don't understand that everything that they know about the X-Men was not invented by Stan Lee, it was Chris Claremont. Like, this is the guy who made everything that you know about the X-Men, was Chris Claremont. Essentially.
Yes. The original Uncanny Five were very different stories.
I mean, you could. There were still the allegories of about racism and discrimination, but in terms of that shit going really hardcore towards those narratives, which are good narratives that needed to be told, particularly during that time period, because I would say absolutely, you know, in the 80s, those were messages that these were stories that did need to be told. We needed those allegories.
Yes.
Because that was a time in which we were still really dealing with still issues of racial segregation and discrimination. Not so much 2017, but 1978, like that era. Yeah, these were times where stories like this, it made sense for the left-leaning politics of comic books to exist.
And again, that creates another weird issue with Marvel Comics specifically. Marvel Comics has a symptom that me and my friends like to call Marvel Citizen Syndrome. Where, yay, it's Captain America. Oh my goodness, look, it's Iron Man. Boom.
I think I know where this is going.
It's Beast.
Yes, yes. How weird, right? Yeah, that's such a weird thing in Marvel, and it's actually why I've often argued that the X-Men should not exist in 616. Like, they need to be in their own, because in a universe where character like Captain America exists. And it's why things like AVX were like, why did this event even happen? This is any time that the Avengers or Captain America has to interact with the X-Men is so stupid, because you have like the entire all of society in the Marvel Universe hates mutants, and Cap is all like anti-discrimination and you know, for, you know, true justice, the American way, and he would obviously not support this shit, but he's just completely silent when it comes to the fucking mutants, pretty much. I mean, sometimes he'll say some shit, but for the most part, it's like, whatever, let him go live on an island. I mean, get them the fuck out of my country. Like,
the island was called Genosha. It didn't work out.
Yeah. No, I know what I...
That's Utopia, but I mean, you notice that too in a lot of comics, specifically with mutant persecution. No one else gets involved. Like, you'd figure... Even in the early days, like before Claremont brought in what we all know and love about X-Men, like when Stanley introduced the Sentinels, like you think the Avengers would have shown up
shit? Like, why are they okay with these giant fucking robots? It's
exactly,
essentially genocide in an entire group of people.
Like in AVX, like when Cyclops is in like the first issue of the core miniseries, Cyclops calls Cap out. Where the hell are the Avengers in like the last 3 years, dude? Like, you know, aside from Disassembled and House of M, every major mutant catastrophe after that, the Avengers are nowhere to be seen. Like, you guys are supposed to be all about protecting people and preserving, quote-unquote, the status quo.
Particularly after House of M, where they have, like, they're already a minority, and now they're an ultra-minority, and they're getting fucking, they're still getting attacked, even if they don't have any powers anymore. So
exactly.
It's like, the mutants are really fucked, and nobody cares.
Cap doesn't even blink, and he's like, no, we can't worry about that now. The Phoenix is coming, and of course, Scott's already got in his head, because he's gone from, like, I loved Scott Summers back in the day when he was, like, the Jim Lee, you know, shoulder straps. You know, he was cool, but in the recent years, like, he's slowly become Magneto, and he's become, like, this...
That's sort of interesting that Scott and Magneto have changed places a little bit. That's a little bit of an interesting switch of characters. I don't know if that was on purpose,
the mutant parties
way.
have flipped.
Yeah, but I'm not thinking heretic. What do you call it when somebody's like very crazy about their beliefs?
Zealot.
An ideologue?
That's it. Zealot. Like, he's become more of a zealot. And, you know, he's like, the Phoenix is kind of, the Phoenix is a force of universal rebirth. They're going to bring, she's going to bring back the mutants. And that's his entire reason, pretty much, aside from the racism and bigotry on the mutants' part, because it's not like the mutants are pure as the driven snow in Marvel comics. Like, you know, there's racism on both sides. It's not just the white men, you know, making fun of black people. It's there's racism on each side.
Is it right to call it racism, though? I think that's like a bad word to say to describe. I mean, it is an allegory for that, of course.
Yeah,
but it's like mutantism. I don't know.
Well, no, it's just not... like damn filthy muties. But,
yeah,
you know. Cyclops, and again, this is again getting into like personal politics with characters like Captain America, is, you know, he's got the right stuff. He wants everyone to be equal and do the right thing and don't help the old lady across the street and all that, versus the politics of Cyclops and 90% of the mutants, because sometimes Wolverine just doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, that, well, in AVX, that was it. But it was, that was another one of those events where it's like, why don't you guys just fucking talk the shit out? Because I think you agree. So it's like, yeah, like, maybe we should bring the mutants back because otherwise our species is going to die out, or whatever you want to call mutants. They're dying. There's like 10 of us left, essentially, that still have powers, right?
Yeah.
After
yeah.
I mean, it was something like, it was reduced to 1%, I think.
198.
Yeah, so it was 10%. And or something like that of all the mutants were left. So yeah, like we want the Phoenix to bring back mutants because otherwise our entire whatever we are, a species, a new I forget what's the Latin term for the mutants.
Homo superior.
Homo superior will or whatever will die out. So.
So, another thing I want to talk about is mutant registration has always been a hot topic. One of the core issues of X-Men, the idea of no, we will not register. Put our names on a list just because we were born with these abilities.
There's some good reasons for that. And, How many times a day does S.H.I.E.L.D. get hacked?
Yeah, exactly. And,
well, you look at
I'm going somewhere with this. Sorry. So I found it very hypocritical that when Mark Millar was the head writer of Civil War, where it was the registration wasn't just simply for mutants, it was for everybody with a power. Or ability, yeah. Or happened that might
meta-human
just,
human
or even term, yeah. like might have like gone to the gym a lot, and happened to have like a suit with some stilt legs or something. They have to register too. It's
stilt
like
man has to register.
It's like everyone has to register. It's like it's not just mutants, and the mutants like sit the whole thing out. And it's like no, this is the time where everyone should be knighted, and no, we're not going to register. And what I love about this is the writers, like I said, the writers have always been on the left side, and they're practically in an echo chamber in the bullpen. So they were shocked that the majority of their readers found the concept of superhuman registration so morally repugnant to the concept of American idealism
that it made everyone hate Tony Stark? Yeah.
And Millar was shocked the most. Millar said in interviews, I could write Captain America as cowardly and as craven as possible, but everyone will still support him, and I don't understand you Americans why.
I think part of that was because, the basic idea of registration made some sense, right? It was what happened with the direction they took Civil War, where it went pants on head retarded and didn't make any sense anymore. Because it was like making it apply to everyone. And also, when you start to think, like I said, the basic idea makes some sense. However, why the fuck does it matter if the government registers Wanda in their database, someone who can warp reality? Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do to stop it, motherfucker? Like, there's nothing you can do. There is nothing anyone can do to stop Wanda Maximoff from doing whatever the hell she wants with her reality warping powers. Like, that's
another example. One of the most morally repugnant stories in Civil War for me was there was this mutant whose powers was simply flight. There was nothing else that this mutant could do, just fly. Mutant, I believe she called herself like Cloud Nine, and that her only power is she can fly. Mm-hmm. And because she could fly, the mutant registration, the Superhuman Registration Act, pardon me, registered her, sent her into training in the Initiative, and trained her to be a sniper, and she was still under 18.
Right. Well, that all that shit was fucked up. That's what I'm saying, where that stuff started to get really crazy of making it very obvious that the Superhuman Registration Act was, well, because there was all kinds of skeevy shit involved with that, too, with in terms of recruiting the superhumans in order to train them to be military, essentially. And that was all fucked up. No wonder everyone despised that storyline.
Robot clone Thor?
Or that the people that were involved on the pro-registration side.
Yeah.
The characters. And everyone got mad that Spider-Man was on the pro-registration side when you put him on that side when they're doing reprehensible shit.
And that's the thing is with Spidey, Marvel knows who their cash cow is. And remember, Spidey flipped really quick once the reviews were in, didn't he?
Yep. Yeah. That's why they had to save Iron Man. It took them years to try and fix him after putting him on the pro-registration, making him the face of registration.
Yes.
So. I think they fixed him now, or people just forgot. I don't know.
I think they just forgot.
You have to give credit to Robert Downey Jr. for saving Iron Man.
Yes, I think Robert Downey Jr. saved Iron Man altogether. He just saved the character in the films and in comics, because everyone was like, once he started being, the you know, suave Iron Man character that he does so well, everyone's like, oh, we can forget Civil War, that's fine. I mean, my favorite scene from Civil War, if I have to pick out one, it's when they're sending Daredevil away and he gives him a handful of coins, the 11 pieces of silver or whatever. I forget how much Jesus or
it
Judas.
Was 11, it was 11 pieces of silver.
30 pieces.
Ooh, 30. Was that it? Was like, ooh, thank you. That Catholic guilt really gets me right there. Fucking love that shit.
And again, like I said, I love the fact that that they did not know their demographic because they write in such an echo chamber that they were so sure that and again, to argue about registration, I would make the argument of even if the people in power now have nothing but good intentions, the existence of the list in itself is a bad thing because what if the next guy in charge doesn't have good intentions? And
sure.
And let me point out, the next guy in charge was Norman Osborn.
Yes, it was. So,
and a thank you.
Well, of course. Yeah. Yeah, of course. The next guy in charge was Norman Osborn, who definitely did not have good intentions. So, oh man, I was so sad about Avengers Academy. I wanted that to work out, and then they ruined that with Hopeless. That made me so. That was one of those things that really made me like, I don't want to read comic books anymore. Because you've like introduced me to these young, new characters, new IPs that I'm interested in, and now you've ruined it. Thanks. Bye.
But like I said, that's. Again, it's like that's where I would put the argument in Civil War is, you know, again, like I said, the existence of a list itself is bad because that means a list can be compromised. In fact, there was a
Shield. Shield gets hacked every single day. And because it's like, who's going to handle this incredibly sensitive list of names and locations of these people who, you know, could be used by supervillains or something whose powers could be used for evil? Shield, okay, well, yeah, they get fucking hacked and broken into every single fucking day. That's the point, that's the plot of every other comic book. So the Shield got compromised, so no thanks.
In fact, there was actually one good comic that was done that was a What If, where basically they pointed out that argument was made, and the decision was made that there would be a list, but the list was only in Steve Rogers' head, no one else has it, and if any, and the backup behind that was Carol Danvers would be trained to oversee the list afterwards if he passes on.
Mm-hmm.
And
that is the worst idea ever.
This is before Carol Danvers was ruined.
No, I just thought the response in that What If is like, oh, we'll have like monthly brain scans and Charles Xavier will check his head, and I was like, yeah, that's gonna work for just so fucking long.
Yeah. But,
so. Carol Danvers would be getting this list before 1970? Because you said before she was ruined.
I have some love for Carol Danvers in the various Avengers stories before they tried to pump her up into Captain Marvel. I mean,
I've never liked her. She's always been awful, really.
Let me put it this way. Some of my favorite stories was in the era where Carol Danvers and Jessica Drew were roommates.
I don't like Jessica Drew's okay, I guess. She's better than Carol, but...
But I love the stories where the two of them are roommates, because it's sort of like watching a super-powered 90s sitcom.
Yeah, I'd rather read Power Girl or She-Hulk. Like, there's such better characters.
I wouldn't trust the list to a woman who got drunk... Jealous that the Avengers went to the moon is like, fuck you guys, I'm gonna fly.
But she wasn't even jealous they went to the moon. Like she hadn't hit rock bottom in her alcoholism, so it was everyone else's fault, and they're all judgmental pricks. And she's like, I'm gonna fly to the moon after she's halfway into a bender, and she topped out somewhere over New York City, and then fell back to Earth, and then.
I didn't know that. That's some Hal Jordan shit.
That happened just after Heroes Reborn when they rebooted like Avengers, Fantastic Four, Iron Man, and Thor. Okay.
Yeah.
And Kurt Busiek is one of my favorite runs.
I love Busiek, yeah.
Busiek and Perez on there, and
yes,
like the first issue, Iron Man walks into Carol in the Avengers Lounge in Avengers Mansion. She's having a wee nip, and he's just immediately his spidey senses are raised because he knows the sides. Like he knows that, you know, this is years after the heart surgery, but he's still an alcoholic. And
mm-hmm.
eventually they have the Avengers Tribunal where she's put on trial and everyone's come up and she's like, aha, you were undermining me from the start. And he's like, no, I withheld my observations because I wasn't sure, but I did let Cap know. And then eventually they don't even render judgment because she's all like, fuck you guys, I'm going home. And she literally storms out of Avengers Mansion, heads to the nearest bar, starts getting shit-faced, right. And then she hears on the news how, like terrorist faction of Kree soldiers are on the moon doing shit, and the Avengers have gone after them. And she's all like, well, I'm going to show you guys. And she literally can't make it.
Oh.
That's Carol. Like, and honestly, before all that, like, whatever the politics are of pumping Carol up to be Captain Marvel, like, I knew of her as this superhero Miss Marvel that Rogue got her super strength and flight from. And that's really as much as I knew. And when they brought her back, as they did in Avengers for a while, I found her to be interesting because, you know, she's this flawed character, but she's really gung-ho. And, well, I don't know, something about that costume just bothers me. And it's not like I hate it or anything. I'm just...
The Miss Marvel costume?
Well, yeah, like the opera gloves, like the thigh-high boots. I don't know, it's just...
You don't like the black outfit?
I like the black outfit. It's classic.
I kind of like the original Miss Marvel.
With the belly button? Like,
yeah.
That was my... I like that. That was my jam. But you know, talking about, like, when we were talking about mutant registration there, is... No, you think about it now, the X-Men were basically political terrorists in the X-Men cartoon in the 90s, because the first two episodes deal with them breaking into a government building, you know, thrashing government employees and destroying all these confidential mutant files. Like, they're basically political terrorists. And they were driven to
avenge Morph.
Well, yeah, no, Wolverine had to avenge Morph.
This one's for you, Morph.
I don't care what anyone says, that is still one of my favorite Wolverine moments. But, yeah, like, as sucky as the plan is, that we're going to force mutants to register and, you know, just and no one, I wish one character would have said and opened themselves up to all this, like, violences. Like, well, if they don't have anything to hide, they should register. It's like, that's still not answering the question. Like, right. Moments, beats like that in comics or animation when talking about the X-Men and the whole politics of forcing a cult, like a subset or subsection of our society, you know, a particular culture, that's like having, if they were to make a Muslim database and everyone that's Muslim has, they have to register, you know, because it's like the House of Un-American Activities back in the 50s is this whole thing of, like, you got to go through and swear the allegiance oath on a stack of Bibles and Playboys, and that means you're a red-blooded American, but not too red, because too much red is Russian. Like,
yeah, that's interesting. I mean, because I was like, well, so I was for Trump's travel ban, for example. But I guess when you put it that way, yeah, because I'm against mutant registration because I don't trust. Well, but this is very different. Real life is very different from comic books, right? So I think the U.S. government is just a little bit, not significantly, but a little bit more secure than S.H.I.E.L.D. in the real world. Maybe not, like I said, not a ton, but a little bit more secure than S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, the government's more than secure than the DMC.
Yes.
Your password is password.
Password is password, yeah. I think we're a little bit better than that. And I wouldn't be talking about, like, that was a travel ban that I supported, not, like, finding every Muslim or any person who identifies as a Muslim, which, by the way, is way different than, like, oh, you can fucking, shoot lasers out of your eyes. Like, that's way different.
We're talking about countries that ban Christians from immigrating into them. So.
Exactly. So, fair's fair. Sorry. You know, we see the preponderance of terrorist crime coming from these countries. And we didn't even include all of them. But I could see people making that argument that, like, Mutant Registration Act is absurd. And it is in the context of the Marvel Universe. But it's absurd for different reasons. That they can't really be compared to real life. Yes. And I know that it was an allegory for real life. Shit like that. More for Jewish people being rounded up, for example. And, yeah.
Or Japanese people.
As bad as that was, and I'm not going to say that there was any moral high ground on the Japanese internment, I will just point out the fact that you know, they weren't tortured. And, yes,
like, and we did pay reparations. Oh,
yes.
Sorry, my phone just rebooted itself.
Yes. Like I said, it's still reprehensible, the Japanese internment. And again, I'm not going to defend it to a point, but at the same time, I'm just going to say, you know, you can't compare that to what happened to the Jews. No way.
But to go back to something that I think it was Aiden had mentioned, or Ben, you had mentioned about, like with Civil War One and the registration of all powered and non-powered peoples, like one of the most, and that what happened with Cloud Nine, one of the more politically, what I would say almost fascinating is like, how do you define powers and how that registration affected a character in the Avengers Initiative called MVP, who was like the great grandson of Abraham Erskine. Now, we find out through this character, his grandfather, in addition to creating the Super Soldier Serum, I think it was either Abraham or his son had come up with like this basically Doc Savage-like plan, diet plan and exercise plan, like calisthenics that no one had ever heard of. And they illustrate this in this one comic where they go to recruit MVP for the initiative, where he was getting like full ride scholarships left, right and center. But then it got out that he was the grandson of the guy that gave the juice to Captain America. So all of a sudden everyone starts pulling all these offers and they're kind of ostracized and they have to move to like Kentucky and live on some farm out in the bush where no one knew who they were and they have to change their names. And I always kind of found that fascinating politically speaking, is that this guy gets outed like that. And it's basically a rumor that, of course, that's why he's so good, because he's the grandson of the guy who created Captain America. Of course he's on the juice. And then when he's talking about Civil War and politics, you look at everyone's favorite crossover of 2016, Civil War II.
I actually was going to go somewhere else first. There was a DC comic event. Oh my goodness, it's over 10 years ago now. Jesus, wow.
You're getting old.
Yes, I am getting old. Where it was during the election, one of the elections, where they had this story where basically this severely left candidate was going to be assassinated. The JLA assigns Ollie Queen to like protect him, and the media spots Ollie Queen near this candidate. So they were asking, does Green Arrow support this candidate? And Green Arrow finally comes out and says, "Yeah, he's my guy." He was Green Lantern for a while, and he's a jackass.
Guy Gardner?
Yeah, Guy Gardner, like, finds, like, this knuckle-dragging guy who's running. He says, well, then he's my guy. And then everyone's like, well, who's Superman's gonna vote for? And it was a really ridiculous event. Does anyone remember this?
No, I'm not surprised that they would do that with Guy, though. Talk I love about... Guy.
When it comes to DC Comics, I mean, the most politically minded story I can think of is President Luthor, which ends up to his impeachment in Ben's favorite animated adaptation, Public Enemas.
That book was so bad, so bad.
But yeah, no, it's like when it comes to politics, like the most politically minded comic that I think of comes out in the heyday of, you know, Green Lantern and Green Arrow, like Hard Traveling Heroes, like my Ward Speedy is a junkie.
Yes, exactly. Like, and
one of the first comics from DC published without the Comics Code Authority. Then you have the first issue of their team up that sends them on the Hard Traveling Hero storyline, where the old black man is like, "Heard you about saving those yellow skins and them orange skins and them purple skins, but what about us black skins?" And all of a sudden,
You know what? If I was Hal Jordan, I'd say I saved the planet 37 times.
Yeah.
That's why they agree. You are still alive because of me.
A comic character written by Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams back in the day. Of course, those words are going to cut.
Now,
right
white guys, would you consider Neil? Now, would you consider Neil Adams conservative because he's a crackpot?
No.
Is that the guy who claimed he did everything for the comic book industry?
Neil Adams is a contrarian. Neil Adams is a contrarian. He says things just to be contrary to people. A good example of this is back in the day, he would shit on Jack Kirby because everyone else loved Jack Kirby. He's a contrarian. But he's still a leftist. And to talk about this Denny O'Neil comic.
But he thinks the Earth is hollow.
Yes, he does. And,
what?
That's where Skarkaris is, you know, the warlord.
And like I said, if you look at that issue with you know, what do you do for the Blackskins? A very interesting story. I know someone who actually knew these guys and actually saw the issue come out, and called it the most condescending piece of crap he's ever read. That was my mentor, Wayne Howard, who was a black man.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew these guys. He worked with these guys, and he thought that was insulting as hell. Because yeah. You know, he was like, well, Hal Jordan saved the planet 37 times. All we need to do for him is thank him.
Yeah.
And again, it's like if you really ask the people who are involved, you know, who look beyond politics and they look at the characters involved and say, well, you know what? Who am I to complain? This guy saved the planet. You know, it's sort of weird. I mean, if you talk about politics and comics, I think we also had to talk briefly about one of the loudest writers that have written both for DC and Marvel, Peter David.
Yeah, and I love Peter David is the thing. I really, really love his work. He's one of my favorite authors, so. But he is outspoken.
I actually have a funny story about Peter David. And do you remember the Young Justice issue with the guy at the pro-guns rally talking, and then you have Arrowhead shooting arrows at him, and he runs off screaming?
No, I don't remember that one.
Okay. Well, I have a funny story about this issue. I have a friend online that we used to hang out on this comic book board called, I think, the Alvarado comic book boards. Peter David and Todd Nock hung out on these boards. We actually used to chat with mm-hmm. them all the time, interacted with
oh,
them.
Oh, nice.
And this friend of mine named Chuck actually debated with Peter David several times about things like gun control. So that my friend Chuck was a very right-leaning fellow, very nice mm-hmm. guy, a very intelligent fellow. And what happened was the actual speech that this guy gives in the comic are exact quotes from the message board of Chuck's argument against Peter David.
Mm.
And Peter David did it, and he actually mocked Chuck on the message board saying, I did this because I thought it was funny.
Mm. Mm.
So, yeah. Some writers take it very personally, and they actually will interrupt an issue of a comic book to mock people they disagree with.
Yeah. I mean, I've met Peter David a couple times, or I've met him at conventions, you know, and he seemed like a nice guy to me.
He has very lovely teeth, doesn't he?
he was very nice, though. He was very friendly and talkative to me. And, I mean, like, so much of his work is favorites of mine, where it's sometimes, like, that's that kind of thing where, like, if you're at some point, I think this is the way that most of us should be about pretty much everything. As long as your politics don't overly influence your work, someone's work, or in general, I should say, we should be able to be like meh and throw it aside, even if it's in contrast to our own. Because like, I don't care how much of a crazy lefty Peter David is. Like his run on, what would I even start with? My favorite Peter David Hulk.
Supergirl.
Oh my God, what would be my favorite Peter David one? Aquaman has to be it because oh my God, he's Aquaman. He saved Aquaman. I think he made Aquaman great again.
And who'd you vote for in the last election?
Who did I vote for?
Do you want to make Aquaman great again? I mean, it sets it a theme.
Yeah, no, obviously I was a Trump supporter. Like, he was cool to me. I've always been a conservative. So if he wasn't, like, I mean, I didn't, like, walk him and be, like, say something rude to him, like something really right-wing leaning. But I've never gotten that, I mean, now, again, maybe it's just because I'm a big fan of his work, but I haven't gotten that kind of extreme lefty vibe from him. It just in his work. I'm not talking about his personal behavior. But just in his work. I could be wrong.
Well,
Hulk and Aquaman are my shit, yeah.
Like I said, you'd have to really look at like Young Justice because it was very overt in Young Justice.
Did I read his run on Young Justice?
His run was the only run on Young Justice.
Wait, what? He did write Young Justice. The cartoon?
No, the comic. The 90s comic.
I haven't read that. I haven't read it at all then, man. I really haven't. I'm a complete idiot then.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's
I've read like Perez and Wolfman's Teen Titans, which is essentially what I thought Young Justice was based on. The cartoon. I didn't know that there actually was a 90s comic. Fuck me.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's very it was actually going to originally have a different author. It was going to be written by who again, Red? Originally?
Is it the same team? Because I mean, it's in terms of the characters. So it's the original Teen Titans team.
No, it was Tim Drake, Bart Allen, and Connell Superboy were the original Young Justice team. And then they later got Wonder Girl, Arrowette, and Secret.
It must sound that I haven't ever read that, but now I probably will. I'm just. I'm actually astounded I haven't really read the original, because I love that cartoon, but...
If you love the cartoon, the comic is completely different.
It's okay. I mean, I like a lot of those characters. Well, I'm not... Actually, Tim is my least favorite Robin. I really could deal without Tim.
Tim has... A lot of Tim's best moments are actually in that comic.
Really? Maybe that's why I don't like Tim, because I've never read that.
Like, him and Connell, Superboy, have...
Yeah, good.
An awesome romance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know that either. Yeah. Maybe I will have to check. Oh, I should, because I love that cartoon. And I'm normally not the kind of person who like bases my knowledge on comics on cartoons, but I love that cartoon, and I wanted it. I was so upset when it got canceled. It really upset me.
Well, season 3 next year.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to comics politics.
Well, one thing, Ben, before, like, when you talk about Peter David and his politics and his comics, have you guys ever read the issue of Supergirl where she defends a Nazi and his right to free speech?
I'm almost positive I remember this, yes.
Yeah, because there's, what's his name, this bald-headed guy with a goatee named Cutter who was kind of like the...
Yeah. No, I almost have this page saved. Because yeah. I saved that page, I think, because I was like, this is fucking awesome. Yeah, I mean, I do remember that.
I forget, I think Steel might have shown up in the story somewhere because, you know, he's a black man and he's proud and all that. And he's pissed off at Supergirl because she shows up and basically tells everyone that's protesting this hate speech guy's speech. And she's like, he has every right to, under the law, he has every right to say what he is. And I remember reading that and just kind of feeling incensed because, you know, I'm like, a pasty-faced white boy from eastern Saskatchewan farm country. Like, I have never been oppressed in my life, but I feel insulted for everyone because Nazis are bad, you know, and speaking this way about people. But then again, Supergirl has a point because, everyone has the right to speak. So, like, where do you where is that line, you know?
I think there's also a scene with Captain America where he almost says the exact opposite. Here, I've got it right here. Yeah. This is a line. I don't remember what I have this picture saved. So it's, listen to me, all of you out there. You were told by this man, your hero, that America is the greatest country in the world. He told you that Americans were the greatest people, that America could be refined like silver, could have the impurities hammered out of it and shine more brightly. He went on about how precious America was, how you needed to make sure it remained great, and he told you anything was justified to preserve that great treasure, that pearl of great price that is America. Will I say America is nothing? Without its ideals, its commitment to the freedom of all men, America is a piece of trash. A nation is nothing. A flag is a piece of cloth. I fought Adolf Hitler not because America was great, but because it was fragile. I knew that liberty could easily be snuffed out here, as in Nazi Germany. As a people, we were no different from them. When I returned, I saw that you nearly did turn America into nothing. And the only reason, you are not less than nothing, is that it is still possible for you two to bring freedom back to America. That, you want to talk about lefty fucking shit in comics? Holy
Jesus
fuck.
Christ, that doesn't even sound like Captain America.
That's from the this page. I think is from the 70s. I'm not sure what exact issue this is. I just have it saved because I was like, what the fuck?
And then you talk about Cap in the 70s. I mean, there was the original Secret Empire storyline where he chases like Number One into the Oval Office. No, they have never explicitly said that this was supposed to be like the sitting president at that time in Marvel Comics. But it's implied that it is, because Number One runs in there, pulls out, I think it was a Luger, and like kills himself. And then that leads to Steve Rogers giving up the suit for the first time and becoming the original Nomad.
Right, right.
Where no man lives, terror dies. and again,
that's
it's
Solo.
Like, you got... Oh, that's right. That was another one. Shit. I was wrong. But anyways, you got to remember, when it comes to politics and comics, everybody hated Richard Nixon.
Right.
It was trendy to hate Richard Nixon. I mean, and I think it got ridiculous. I mean, if you read some of those old comics in the '80s, in the late '70s, you know, early '80s, you know, it's like the Nixon hate is just so strong.
Yeah, I mean that this Cap page, I could post it in the Skype chat. Sure. Just of how fucking egregious it is. Yeah, I think that was probably the era that this came out of. I don't know. I just have the page saved. Again, I don't have the citation where it came from. Or I don't know. More accurately, what we'd say that when you record a comics, not citation. Citation. The issue.
But, I think it's funny that, you know, if you look at, if you look at the trend in comics, you know, hated Nixon. They were actually surprisingly gentle with Reagan.
Hmm.
How were they gentle? He turned into Godzilla.
Compared to what they did with Nixon, that was gentle. Because they were implying Nixon was a secret Hitler.
Yeah, but they had Hitler in Marvel Comics. He was called the Hate Monger. Wow.
Wasn't the Hate Monger a member of the KKK or some shit?
No, he was
the Grand Director.
Yeah, no, the Hate Monger was a clone of Adolf Hitler that had, like, super mesmerizing powers or something, that he could speak and turn people, you know, racist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've never actually read those stories. I just remember reading like a official handbook entry or some such like that.
Hmm.
But
so another political event in comics was, of course, we had to talk about the Civil War II, the sequel.
And it's not like there are politics in there. It's the politics of, you have this predictive technology. It's, you know, did no one watch Minority Report?
It's, yes. Minority Report. Exactly, yes, it's Minority Report.
It's Minority Report. How does anybody, like, it's just this quick rush to, like, giving up your freedom for security because you have the future. I mean,
anyone willing to trade freedom for security deserves neither.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's like the whole thing, and specifically, and it's like, again, not to knock on women who lose a loved one, but I mean, Civil War II, none of that bullshit would have happened if not for Carol Danvers.
Yes.
Because,
fuck.
You know,
damn it.
No, please, say it alone. Fuck Carol Danvers. Because, okay, she falls in love with Rhodey, one of my favorite supporting characters from Iron Man.
Mine too.
You know,
I love Rhodey.
Yeah, and it's, you know, maybe after the next huge cosmic crossover, they'll bring him back, because it's probably what they're going to do with Quicksilver in the movies.
Everyone gets brought back. That's the whole
eventually
thing. That is what really started to make me just get tired with comic books. And I'm newer to it. I don't know how. Like, it's one of those. It's also like, you can't ever leave. You have to come back. They'll draw you back in, even though they keep recycling the same shit over and over. But yeah.
Yeah, God, like, Rhodey's killed by Thanos in this attack, and then the Inhuman Ulysses comes out, and
right.
In her scarred psyche, she hears this guy can see the future. He could prevent shit. No, and all of a sudden she gets like Batman guilt death syndrome to the worst degree, because as much as Batman, his whole thing is predicated on never letting what happened to him happen to anyone else. And that's kind of noble, if not a little crazy, because let's face it, he's not right in the head.
Right.
And then this Carol gets off on that same tick, but she takes it way out into left field because, well, I'm just going to prevent all crimes. And it's okay because I'm preventing crimes and no one's sad anymore and no one's losing their loved ones. And
I couldn't fucking believe that comic came out in 2016. When did Minority Report come out? Jesus Christ.
10 years.
It's like,
prior.
We've heard this fucking story. We've heard this story several times. I could not believe that was the story that Marvel went with. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
But specifically with the whole predictive thing, and I think it was in one of the tie-in miniseries, I don't think it was in the main core series, is Carol busts this businesswoman because Ulysses has a flash of her having a bomb in this, you know, suitcase. And I was also kind of reminded of the movie Paycheck with Ben Affleck, because they have this one scene where the main bad guy's talking to his henchmen. It's like, you know, what they saw didn't happen. And he's like, where were you? I was sitting in the cafe. I was eating pie. I had a cup of coffee. And that's the whole tactic Carol goes on. But then this woman never had a parking ticket in her life. She never had any sort of email or correspondence that even remotely linked her to any sort of criminal ne'er-do-well. But because Carol is so mind, her mind is so shattered and ground to fucking powder because of the loss of her boyfriend. Again, no, I'm not knocking anyone that's lost their boyfriend. I'm not knocking Rhodey. It's just that's where it all comes from. She cannot admit to the fact that this predictive justice thing has holes, like which was Tony Stark's main argument. And this woman's life is effectively ruined, so much so. And this is the other thing that pisses me off about Carol Danvers. In the new Jessica Jones series, the first story arc, Jessica Jones is hired by this woman. Let's just call her Shannon because I can't remember the character's name. She hires Jones to help her, you know, get this whole thing together about she's going to take revenge, get vengeance and justice for all the people that have been screwed over by Carol Danvers. And by the end of the story, you think Jones is going with it, and then it turns out she's on Team Carol. And she was just doing it.
I didn't read that. Well, Carol is so irredeemable right now.
Well, no, that's the thing. Like, they've infected Jessica Jones. Like, I'm sorry. The only Jessica Jones I care for is Kristen Ritter now, because she would never do that shit in the Netflix series. But it's just
old Bendis. Jessica Jones, but that's about it.
But the whole idea of predictive justice, and then that they would base this entire crossover, like in Marvel's Infinity Event from like a couple of years ago, with it was part of Jonathan Hickman's lead up to like Secret Wars. That made more sense, and it was nothing more than another aliens coming to fuck up Earth, and the Avengers have to hold the line. That made more sense and was more of a satisfying story than something like this that is. Like, how do you justify any of these actions? Oh, yeah, no, we prevented bad stuff from happening. But if they don't actually commit the crime, you can't make them do the time.
Yeah, exactly. That's absurd.
And this actually ties into something very interesting. You know, talking about politics and comics, let's talk about the next political event that happened, like, rapid fire right after Civil War II, where we've got the building of, you know, Steve Rogers is a secret Hydra agent all along.
Oh God, that no, I
and Red, and Red Skull is Donald Trump.
Sick. Yes, but they fucked that up because they made him sound reasonable. Now I've heard the argument that like, well, Hitler sounded very reasonable to people in Weimar. Yeah, he did. That's why people followed him. That's not a good argument. You know, like that's really not a good argument. If your argument is, well, of course we're making Red Skull sound reasonable because Hitler sounded reasonable. No.
I mean, if you go to Venezuela and you say, hey, look, I know how to get us to where we don't have to, like, hunt fucking rats every night just to put food on the table, you're going to have a lot of people be like, maybe we should listen to this guy.
Yes, exactly. That's not smart. Well, I mean, whatever. Like, again, you guys do whatever the fuck you want. You're clearly fucking this shit up. But congratulations. Just, you know, have your fun, I suppose.
Marvel even went so far as to retroactively change the history of Hydra.
Yeah, to change Steve Rogers, which was bullshit.
They retroactively changed the history of Thor's hammer.
Oh.
What?
Yeah, if you think you're worthy, you can lift the hammer now.
Yeah, it's
because with the free comic book day Secret Empire thing, Red, it's literally ends with Captain America picking up Thor's hammer.
Oh my fucking God, I'm done.
We finally found something that'll break Red.
I may be Canadian, but I'm, and I may be an Indigenous American, but I am a Captain America fan, and you fucking Marvel having Nazi Thor pick up the hammer. That fucking kills Cap for me.
Well, you know, you could make the argument that the Nazis believed in Norse mythology, thus da 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 da.
No, I believe in Norse mythology. No, thanks. I don't do not like, please.
Okay.
Please go away. How awful.
I was partially joking, but you know, The politics and comics kind of go in several different directions. I mean, maybe not politics directly, but some of the funniest shit you'll ever read are Chick Tracks.
Oh, absolutely. I love Chick Tracks. They're fucking hilarious. They're fucking hilarious.
Chick Tracks?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a Christian Christian cartoonist named Jack Chick in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, he still produces work. He still makes them, I think.
Yeah. Well, he hires artists now. He used to draw them all himself, that drew these small single book comics that were like strip sized.
They're comic, they're newspaper strip. So yeah. They're horizontal.
Yeah.
Like four panel per page. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they were called Chick Tracks. They talked about all sorts of things like how
Dungeons and Dragons
is actually devil worship. How Muslims actually worship the moon god.
I just seen a fucking picture of that not too long ago.
It's really funny. It's really funny. Like his shit is hilarious.
Yes.
But yeah. Well. Yeah. Does it resemble a Chick Track? Is that where we're at with Marvel Comics? Has Marvel become Chick Track tier in some way? Yeah, maybe.
I think so. But I think on the other side of things, as much of a conservative I am, I have to bring up there was a run of some conservative comic books in the early aughts.
Like, are we talking about Frank Miller now?
No, I'm talking about Liberality for All.
Oh God, what's that?
Liberality for All. I told you about it. It's Robot Arm, Sean Hannity.
Oh, you did. Yeah. You did tell me about this.
Yeah, Robot Arm, Sean Hannity, and Matt Drudge teaming up to fight an underground war against President Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I still haven't read this. I need to, though. This sounds so fucking amazing.
And there's actually a picture of Sean Hannity holding the first issue, holding with one hand and a thumbs up with his other hand.
This sounds great. I really need to fucking read this. Let me see if I can find a if I can. Let me see if I can legally purchase this and not download a copy at
wink,
all.
Wink.
What no, piracy? That's not. That doesn't happen.
No one steals comic books. I mean.
Well, they try, but they always get found out.
It's not like you should pay for the comics and vote for them with your wallet.
No, that's actually true. I do vote with my wallet when it's something that I find of quality. So I give a huge amount of money to Rick Remender. That's about it right now.
Well, yeah. He did give us Franken Castle, so.
Remender is on fucking fire right now. Everything he is writing for Image, and Jeff Lemire, I love Lemire in general, but like those guys are blowing Image the fuck up. Particularly Remender, though. Jesus.
See, I always think that, you know, if you're going to do this sorts of thing, and, you know, try to make it slightly tongue-in-cheek, because if you try to be too preachy, it's going to come off like a Chick Track.
Yeah, it will. It will.
And I also think you have to do equal representation. Very funny story. Are you familiar with the business Airbnb?
Yeah, sure.
Airbnb, in their first fundraiser to make money to make the actual online application, it was during one of the elections, and they decided the best way to do this fundraiser was they were selling novelty cereal during the election. And these cereals are worth a lot now if you can find a pristine mint box. But these are the two cereals that Airbnb were selling to raise the capital to create Airbnb.
Nice, nice. No, I like stuff like that. Like, that's cool. That's stuff like that. That's cute. It's not partisan. It's, you know, that's fine. I think most people appreciate that when you do this sort of.
That's cheeky and that's fun and it's just for a laugh. Like, they're not trying to. I don't think they're trying to marginalize either guy.
No, and I don't. And, I mean, maybe you could say that they're pandering to both sides, but I don't think that's it. I think it's more like
I have an issue with the Captain McCain's because after the torture that John McCain went through, he could no longer lift his hands above his shoulders. So,
oh shit, I didn't know that. Okay,
you are a terrible human being.
So him doing a salute on the box, while it's a nice sentiment, is not accurate. So which of these boxes would you buy, guys? I just gotta know. Captain McCain's or Obama O's?
Well, let me see. Let me think.
Which one cuts my mouth the least?
Out of these two, it looks like Captain McCain's got fucking checks, like those rice things that are like rice on one side and wheat on the other. Definitely McCain. And I prefer Captain Crunch, so.
I'd probably go with McCain.
I didn't vote McCain either, but
Yeah.
I'd probably go with the Captain McCain's, although I wouldn't count out trying Obama O's. You know, if you get like those little like three pack, you know, camping things you get in the stores during the summer, you know, where you can rip the box open and it becomes.
Right, I tried them both. Yeah, getting a variety pack.
Who would be the third box?
In that election, it would have. Wait, McCain? Was that the first or second time?
Then be John Kerry brand squares.
No, no, it would be John Kerry went against Bush. It would be.
What year was Obama McCain? 2008?
What kind of cereal would a Mormon?
So I would have. I would want. I would want Ron Paul. You could have avoided this cereal. I don't know.
It's happening.
Yeah, it's happening. Yeah, I can't think of a good joke right now. I don't know.
A fruit Nader's?
I almost voted for Nader.
But,
1 year.
But would you vote for that? Would you buy that? Fruit Nader's?
I would buy Fruit Nader's. Yeah. Definitely. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I almost voted for Nader in 2008, but I voted for Ron. Because I was like, I'm going to write somebody in either way. But the only person showed up, the only person who was actually on my ballot was Nader that I would have voted for. Then I just wrote in Dr. Paul. So.
Yes.
Whatever.
But like I said.
State of Ohio. What? How many votes? I wonder if I could look up how many votes Ron Paul got from the state of Ohio. I bet it's like 5, and we'll see. Like, because I lived in Ohio. But oh wait, but I was a write-in from the state of Maryland, so I know. Poor. That picture always makes me sad. He earned.
I want to give him a hug.
I know you do. This here says he earned 7% in Ohio. That's huge.
That's pretty good.
That's enormous. That can't be right. No, that must be some. No, that can't be the presidential. Because, like, nobody would have fucking voted for it. Because I remember in 2012, I was at the same university. I was voting time came up again. Now, but when I was at a Catholic university, so not the most liberal place. I mean, it was liberal. It's a fucking university, of course. But the day after Obama was elected the first time in 2008, they threw such a big party that most of the professors canceled classes the next day.
Wow.
Because it was like, they were like, we're just so happy Obama won. And I had gone around, like, writing Ron Paul for president and chalk on the ground and stupid shit like that. And then when Gary Johnson was up in 2012, I went around and I hung little door hangers up. And I remember I was walking around, it was very, very close to election night. So I was like walking around, or, you know, people voting stuff, like putting my little door hangers on. And as I was doing it, I remember very distinctly some kid. Now I'm a fucking senior at this point. The first year I was a freshman. Second time I was a senior. So I'm like, I'm walking through the dorms where all the freshmen live. Like, hello, you little 18-year-olds. Could I interest you in some Gary Johnson, Al Leppa, Weed Lamal? And some guy got so fucking pissed at me. He like walked out of his dorm room because he had the door open. And they were watching sports or some shit. He's like, hey, fuck off, bitch. Like, how dare you? You're stealing votes from Obama. I'm like, I'm just putting door hangers saying maybe you would want to, you might want to consider voting for a third party. He was irate. And that has always befuddled me of what the fuck this bipartisanship is of, like, don't consider another person. You can only do one or the other. That's always confused the shit out of me because I've always been third party.
And that's why I buy RC Cola.
Yeah. Best choice. The best, it really is truly the best cola if you're going to drink one. Yeah.
That's disgusting. Well, I don't care if it's a third party candidate. I don't care if it's going to save the world. I will not drink RC Cola.
No, that's a Southern thing. You got to drink RC.
Put peanuts in it and drink it.
You put peanuts in it?
Yeah, it's a Southern thing.
I don't know about the peanut thing. And I'm from the South. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Fucking people are weird.
In the South, they call peanuts goober peas.
Oh, interesting. Huh. See, I don't know how South my state is. I think, well, we're barely below the Mason-Dixon, and I think we're barely, we did join the union, so I don't know if we get counted.
I'm in Texas, so.
Let me ask you this. If you yell out the words Bo Duke out into a crowd, do you get more than one or two guys yelling, yee-haw?
Yell out what words?
Bo Duke.
I don't know. I could try right now, but probably not. The students aren't here right now. if the students were here, I don't know. Maybe, perhaps. I mean, I live in a university town, so.
So, So I think we sort of petered out on the politics, so let's go ahead and wrap this up.
Okay, sure. One thing, Ben, that I did, like, I saved this for the end. Just like I said, the top of the show, some politicians actually in comics. It wasn't any great thing. Now, I've spoken with Ben about this before, and I think this was on one of our earlier shows. I love the backup issue. It was early in the Dan slot, like, everything after One More Day, I've loved more or less from Spider-Man to a point.
Obama?
I love the Obama backup.
I liked it too, actually. I liked
that
it
was
too.
Funny.
It was. Yeah. See, that's how you handle politics. Well, now, Marvel has always done this when DC has not. Marvel has always this is partially because of Marvel's sliding timeline, correct?
Yes.
So Marvel can always introduce current politics and doesn't matter if they change it later because of their sliding timeline or whatever. Whereas if DC does it, it makes themselves more dated because of how they do their continuity.
Yeah, whereas Marvel, I think it at any given point, Fantastic Four number one, which is the beginning of the Marvel Universe, happened like 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically how the sliding timeline works. So, yeah, I love the Obama one shot. I thought it was fun. I love the Ash versus Obama.
Oh.
Like, I figured it was a one shot or miniseries where Ash is somewhere kind of in just after Army of Darkness, and he's taken some S-Mart wares to a comic convention, and Obama decides to roll through, which is one of the things I loved about Obama, the fact that he's a Conan the Barbarian fan. Like, he's got a little bit of nerd cred like that.
Right. Yeah, I love shit like that. Like, that's great. And I wasn't an Obama fan, but, like, that's funny.
But
now,
he picked that up, and he picked up, it looked like a Mego $6 million. It shouldn't it be more like $6 billion, huh, guys?
Right.
You know? And then, like I said earlier, we talked about, or had mentioned, you know, Justin Trudeau was in one of the sundry Civil War II tie-ins where he's, like, an old school chum or some such of Tony Stark, and he's, like, trying to... like, dude, you got to reach across the aisle. Like, you guys, you're fucking up your country, and that shit's going to bleed over to us first. And he's, like, trying to talk some sense into Tony and bring him down a step. But one of my favorite nods to Canadian political history was, and I got this in the, I had several issues of the Marvel Saga growing up. And there was basically this 12-issue miniseries where it takes panels and text recounting the history of Marvel Comics from, like, the beginning of time on through the Silver Age. And when they get to, like, around the 80s and they talk about the origin of Wolverine and Department H, and they have the whole thing with Jimmy Hudson, how he stole his prototype, what became the Guardian suit in Alpha Flight, and he took everything but the helmet, and then he basically gets called in by Department H and he meets Pierre Trudeau, like Justin Trudeau's dad.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you said, stuff like that, like those little knowing, like, hey, this guy's a here's this politician. He's in the story. It's like that blinking you miss it sort of cameo. And that's the most politics I really need in my comics outside of making Lex Luthor president. Because let's face it.
But that shit's fun. Or Norman Osborn being.
Well, there's Shield Director. Although he was president in the Earth X miniseries.
Yes, which I love Earth X. I know people hate it, but I really like Earth X. Now, before we go, though, could we talk about the absolute most disgusting, worst, egregious, horrible thing that in comics that came out of the last election?
What was that?
Valiant's Faith.
Are you talking about that fat
I was
chick?
Hoping you guys would bring that shit up.
Are you talking about that fat chick who's supposed to be a superhero, even though being a superhero would mean you'd be burning calories like crazy?
Yeah, but she's really fat. And she has a special issue where she meets Hillary Clinton. And
did you see the Hillary Clinton Dr. Manhattan comic?
No.
One second.
I would say this, though, like the thing about the Faith comic, there were so many things that were so funny about it. For example, that Hillary is having a rally and it's filling an entire football stadium, and it's like, honey, have you seen a Hillary rally?
I don't know, she probably would have had more
pee
people
herself
that...
and fucking need help assistance to walk.
Because it's like, the terrorists are trying to get the hill dog, and the fat lady has to come and save her because she's a huge hill fan. Oh my god. It was one of the funniest things I've read this past year. It was so fucking funny. Nick writing Obama, yeah, I remember that. And then, oh my god. What is this?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my, is that, what is this from?
I have is that no from... I have no idea.
That
but...
that's not from Faith, because no, that's not. I don't remember seeing that. That Faith comic though, it gets reposted. It was getting reposted all the time, both on Co and on Pole. Yeah. So it was getting posted everywhere because it was so embarrassing. It was like, oh, you've really embarrassed yourselves here. Ugh.
Oh well, yeah. I don't think I saw this issue. Faith. I liked Faith as a character because, like, you know,
what? She's a sociopath.
You know, by that, honestly, Ben, by that metric, like 90% of comic book characters sociopath.
That's
you tell
true.
Me you tell me Jughead Jones really gives a shit?
I love Jughead, though.
Yeah. But no, it's just... and just
let's let Red interject. Yeah, Red, please.
Yeah.
Okay. Faith is a sociopath and a murderer. In our first comic, she pushes three criminals out the fucking window, and the next comic, she's sitting there at home eating donuts like nothing happened.
Jesus Christ.
Next panel. She murders three people and then doesn't talk about it at all. That is fucking horrible.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go back and look at those comics again because I'm just saying, like, but I'll have to go back and we'll get back to some point. And just one thing before we wrap it up, Ben. Does anyone remember the greatest political comic book from DC Comics in the 60s and 70s? I am talking, of course, of DC's Prez.
Where shit.
I forgot
teenager
about
becomes pres, and I'm not talking about the new modern day one where like a social media star becomes president because it's in the future and that's how elections work. I'm talking the classic DC Prez. This 18-year-old kid gets elected president. He's doing like all like, you know, I'm abolishing curfews, and it's just like the greatest wish fulfillment power fantasy comic ever. And one of his entourage or his cabinet, sorry, is a stereotypical young Native American with requisite headband and fringed sleeveless vest who doesn't wear a shirt. And this is only slightly better than Brother Power the Geek, a mannequin in a store window that was being used to dry wet clothes and was then struck by lightning and somehow gained sentience and super strength.
I thought that was a Doctor Who storyline, but I don't know.
I love Brother Power the Geek. But the Prez is I mean...
And
it's,
just
one, it's one of those comics where you have to treat it as it trying to be innocent, because I don't think it ever tried to be too serious with itself. Because once you get too serious with yourself, I mean, you get something like Faith. I mean,
Faith is
a horrible comic to begin with, because, again, it's like I never understood this idea of, well, let's make a heavy woman a superhero, because...
Because Fatim Eve doesn't exist or something.
You would be burning calories. Like, let's assume that you, other than being, like, fat, you also are super, you also have, like, the perfect amount of muscle mass to move around and jump around off rooftops, right? Let's assume that. Let's assume that. In 2 weeks, you will be trim because you are burning so many calories running on rooftops that you will just be losing the weight. I mean, if you ever watch Deadliest Catch, there are these people who are working 36-hour days pulling crab pots.
Right.
They are eating like three daily Denny's Graham Slams worth of calories a meal, and they are still losing weight.
It's why Fatim Eve made sense in Invincible, because it's like, oh, you didn't do superhero shit and you had a abortion, and like, oh, that's why you got fat, and then she started doing superhero shit again and she lost weight, because no shit, that's how like calories work.
And
but yeah,
just one thing for and there, I swear to God, this is my last thing. If you ever want to look at Tangent Comics from DC Comics, where they kind of took the idea of where they rebooted Green Lantern Flash in the 60s and just took a name and wrote a whole new reality based on that, where the Atom's like this Superman and Batman is like this haunted suit of armor from this unknown knight from the Round Table. The politics in that world are very interesting, because you have this whole like very X-Menist like segregation of the Sea Devils, which are these mutated sentient forms of sea life that happened after the Bay of Pigs actually went nuclear, and you know, Atlanta is now the southernmost United States city because Florida got nuked off the map and stuff like that. And it's just, they have like shadowy cabals actually running the government. It's Fox Mulder's worst nightmare come true.
This reminds me of something else when we talk about politics and comics, that in the DC Comics universe, there is actually a constitutional amendment that allows superheroes to testify in court. without revealing their identity.
Isn't that how Harvey Dent got the acid in his face?
I'm not.
Batman wasn't made to unmask. Yeah, but Batman was there in court testifying, and then the mobster got up there. Oh, I got, you know, antacids for my ulcer. And, fuck you, Dent. And, like I said, that's actually
I think they in the DC Comics universe, it's the 14th Amendment in the DC Comics universe. I don't know what the real 14th Amendment is, but in the DC Comics universe, the 14th Amendment means you can testify in costume. The Marvel universe has a different statute that allows that somehow.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you ever want to look at, like, a twist on, like, alternate history and alternate facts, as the statement has gained popular these days, I would recommend looking at the Tangent Comics, because it's kind of a unique twist on the whole, you know, political scene.
Oh, in Marvel Comics, it's basically, if you technically are an Avenger, you are a U.S., United States government official in... Basically, nearly every superhero was in a reserve Avenger at some point, so basically, nearly every superhero
That doesn't make sense, because Spider-Man wasn't an Avenger.
He was a reserve member.
Reserve Avenger, which is always what I found funny, when Spider-Man, like, has to show up to some Avenger shit, and it's like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, what can I really contribute to this?
He can chunk cars at the bad guy. That's more than, like, say, Hawkeye could do.
Don't talk shit about my man. Don't ever.
I'm sorry. I'm just...
Well, you look at it this way. He's currently funding the core Avengers team in Marvel Comics.
Hawkeye is? I thought he was
Spider-Man.
Oh, Spider-Man through his research shit or something.
Their headquarters, like the core team of like Spidey and Hercules and Vision, they're based out of the Baxter building now.
And they also just got Iron Man on their team.
An infamous Iron Man.
Yeah.
But there's a comic where Spider-Man testifies in court against J. Jonah Jameson.
Yes, and he was the reserve member of the Avengers. I have that issue.
And he tells J. Jonah Jameson he's black.
That was hilarious. Yeah. That was hilarious.
I also remember the time they had, I think it was when Venom, they had that glut of Venom miniseries throughout the mid to late 90s, and there's one where Venom's on trial, and I think Daredevil is representing Eddie Brock, and Spider-Man is brought in to testify on, I think, Venom's behalf, but he's testifying to the fact that the symbiote is the problem, and they just kind of gloss over the fact that Eddie Brock is kind of batshit insane at this point.
Yeah, remember,
hey,
Peter
guys,
Parker
I really am apologizing for this, but I probably need to go.
Let's wrap this up right now, then. I apologize. We kept on...
No, it's been really fun. No, we got... Because I had to mention Faith, because that shit could not go through the politics thing and not mention that horrible comic, so...
Go ahead, Red.
I think we have to do a topic of virtual singing in comics these days as well.
We do.
Yeah, it would definitely be another thing to talk about. Yeah, for sure. Have me on. You want to talk more political
we
stuff?
Absolutely. We'd love to have you on.
Have
you
me on are, any, every on any time, then.
You are fucking hilarious.
Thank you.
So, to wrap this up, this year is Ben.
And JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
And Aiden Paladin, Altana Volt.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.
Bye-bye.
Peace out.